Good day. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take on this Friday Eve. Max Kellerman, top of the morning to you, sir. Good to see you. Hey, Stephen A., how we feeling? Good to see you as well. Yeah, but we know when the light comes on, you are always on, sir. I did see you late last night and again this morning, so I feel you. Let's get into it, guys.
Red Bull, Stephen A., lots of coffee. Well, you need caffeine.
All I have to say is Trae Young, Max. He doesn't need any caffeine. My God, 48 points, 7 rebounds, 11 assists, pulling off the upset on the road. He's young, but he's ready.
We got weapons, too. I believe in this team, too. I mean, they got some good pieces over there. Got a lot of really talented people, but we do, too. And like I said, I believe in this team, and we knew we could get a stop if we just buckled down and got it.
You got to make it as tough as possible for him and make him play a lot of one-on-one. But at the end of the day, like, he had 48 points, right? 48 points, like, he's a great player. He has the ball a lot in his hands, but we just got to make it as tough as possible.
Joining some incredible company, Young tied LeBron James for the most points by a player at age 22 or younger in a conference or division finals game. LeBron had 48 against the Pistons. That was game 5 of the 07 conference finals. But there's another champion he reminds us of, and that is Steph Curry. Max, would you say Trae Young's ceiling is actually higher than Steph's?
Yeah, in the playoffs, which is the only thing I care about. I don't care. See what Stephen A. is doing right now? That's how I feel about the regular season. You know what the truth is? So does the league. Or they wouldn't have 2/3 of the team. 15 teams in each conference. 10 of them are still playing when the regular season's over. So, you know, the real season starts in the playoffs. What happens then? You know what happens then? How many Western Conference Finals? Steph Curry, what is he, 32, 33 now? How many Western Conference Finals he's played in? 5. You know how many Western Conference Finals games he's played in? 27, by my count. How many times he scored 48 points in a conference final? 0. How many Conference Finals games Trae Young has played in? Like, as soon as he gets there, the first time he gets there, game 1, does something Steph's never done in his entire career, because he's fearless under pressure. Steph is careless under pressure. Steph shimmies in the regular season. Trae shimmies in the playoffs, Stephen A., and I'm going to need a disclaimer for Steph fans pretty soon, like you have for LeBron. He's a great person, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm a huge Steph fan, but our job is to tell it like it is. And Steph, this year, got sent packing this year, playing in a play-in game, because he's playing out of his mind the whole time. And then in overtime, 0 points in the last 3:30, he goes home. Like in 2016, greatest offense ever, game on the line, last 4:22, at home to be the greatest team ever, 73 wins. 0 points in the last 4:22 for the whole team, including Steph. But there was a careless turnover. Trae is Steph Curry, but in the playoffs, he elevates. The answer is yes, the ceiling is higher in the playoffs when it counts.
You know, on a debate show, we disagree, but I'll openly admit, you know, you do have this knack for just annoying the living hell out of me to the point where, I mean, I'm really going to have a problem. I'm really going to have a conversation with the bosses about, I think I need to be paid more for having to talk basketball with you. I really do. So Trae Young shows up in his first year in the playoffs. And because he has obviously looking like a superstar and playing out of his mind, he has this one series, and then we just ignore a 3-time champion in Steph Curry, who's been to 5 NBA Finals. And by the way, I've got some numbers, because I know that is near and dear to your heart. Trae Young shooting 34% from 3-point range. Steph Curry, a career 43% shooter from 3-point range. Steph Curry shooting a career 47, 48% from the field. Trae Young at 43. But, you know, obviously Trae Young has the capabilities to have a tremendous upside, but he's not the shooter that Steph Curry is. We all know that. And the same Steph Curry that you talk about was once a candidate when Kevin Durant got NBA Finals MVP one of those times. A lot of people thought it was going to be Steph. You act like Steph chokes in the postseason, for crying out loud, which is completely false, untrue, and just an uneducated basketball synopsis. But I'm just looking at, Steph Curry in all of his years of playing playoff basketball. And I'm looking at career numbers of 26.5 points, 6 assists, 45% shooting, 40 from three-point range. You look at him in the Western Conference, you know, about 6 Western Conference series, 25. All right, we're shooting 43% from three-point range, 46% from the field. It's like, what are you talking about? And I'm looking at Trae Young. Trae Young has been spectacular. There is no question about that. But I was covering Game 7 against Philadelphia when he made that big-time shot. He also was shooting 4 of 22 prior to hitting that big-time shot. Last night, he was absolutely sensational, particularly in the first three quarters. But he did shoot 4 of 13 from three-point range. And I think it was like, you know, 1 of 7 from the field in the fourth quarter, if I remember correctly. All I'm trying to say is that not to take anything away from Trae Young, because he is sensational. And a comparison between him and Luka is an entirely different argument altogether. And that's something that we can get into later on in the show. But to sit up there and say a ceiling higher than Steph Curry.
But it's okay to compare him to Luka, right?
No. Excuse me?
It's okay to compare him to Luka, right?
The reason why I'm saying that is because they're both young. They both came in the league at the same time. And on top of it all, they were traded for one another.
I got it. Luka has a higher ceiling, potentially. So it doesn't mean he'll do it, but he has a higher ceiling than Steph.
I didn't ask you to answer any questions about Luka because we're going to get into that later in the show. We gonna do that.
Yeah,
we
don't need to get into that now. You can't on the one hand say, no, he doesn't have a higher ceiling than Steph, but you can compare him to Luka because Luka has a higher ceiling than Steph. Doesn't mean he'll get there, but he has a higher ceiling. Look, this is the bottom line. You brought up finals. Steph has played in 5 finals. He's won 0 finals MVPs. 0. The first time when they won it, and by the way, I'll tell you something else. He's never really won a finals as the best player on his team. The only time he did it was 2015, which should have an asterisk because both Kyrie and Kevin Love got hurt, and it still went 6 games.
Pause for 1 second. You just said he never had that, but then you said the only time.
Yeah, that's what I said. It should come with an asterisk.
Best player on his team the first championship.
Was he the best player on his team? Would the Bucks have beaten the Nets if they had Kyrie and James Harden on his team? Yeah, he was that year.
That's all I asked.
Now let me ask you something else. Who won finals MVP? The point was, it was so obvious that LeBron was twice as good as he was that they had to give the MVP not to him because he didn't play well enough, but to the guy who guarded LeBron. They gave it to Iguodala. The next year, LeBron beat him. Steph was the best player on the team. Next year, he had KD, right?
Now, chest out,
he has KD, and he plays better in the finals. Who wins finals MVP? Both times KD. By the way, in 2016, had LeBron not won it, Draymond was about to win it. Still not Steph. And then finally, he doesn't have KD again because KD gets hurt. They lose again, and once again, no finals MVP. That's 5 times in the finals, 0 finals MVPs. Mm-hmm. Steph is a great player. Are we going to pretend that when it matters most, he's a lesser version of himself? Stephen A., he's a little careless with the ball when it matters most. His shot goes away a little bit when it matters most. The best Steph I've ever seen in the finals was against Toronto. He won a game by hitting some threes late, 1 or 2 times where he really came through. In my memory of him playing in the finals, that's all I can recall where it's like, wow, Steph really elevated in that situation. Well, Trey has a chance to be the kind of player who actually gets better when it matters most.
Well, I sincerely hope that, you know, your soliloquies, your diatribes and all of that other stuff contributes to ratings, because you're going to be doing most of the talking today because, number one, I'm tired. I'm really not interested in talking to you about basketball because your opinions absolutely, utterly annoy me because they make no sense whatsoever. When you talk about Steph Curry, we talk about the first year. He was a baby in this league. He was still the best player on his team. Also, who he plays with does matter, because when you have an elite marksman like Klay Thompson, you also share the basketball as well. We can't ignore that, okay? The second go-round, you know that he wasn't 100%. We've talked about that even. You admitted that the year that LeBron and them beat them because they pushed it to the limit trying to get those 73 wins. He wasn't completely healthy.
Give me the excuses for the next 3 now, because they're 5.
Did I not shut the hell up when you were talking?
Nah.
I thought I did. I stepped back. Fall back.
Okay,
The point is, Steph Curry, the second go-round, he wasn't 100%. When KD got there, one of those 2 years, it was a legitimate argument as to whether or not Steph was going to be the MVP compared to KD. First go-round, KD averaging 35 on better than 50% shooting, going up against LeBron for the first time fully loaded. Obviously, this dude was ready, and everybody knew that KD was going to get that. Second go-round, that wasn't necessarily the case. When you talk about Andre Iguodala winning that first MVP, he showed up, and he was a big time. He was hitting wide-open shots because Klay and Steph were being keyed on and give him a lot of credit. But it was primarily because of his defense as well, which was the same reason why Kawhi Leonard got the MVP going up against LeBron when he was with San Antonio. We have watched Steph Curry put on absolute shows in the postseason. There have been times when he's been a lesser version than himself, just like has been the case with Trae Young. And then there have been other times when he's been every bit what we've expected. Then he comes into this season without Klay Thompson at age 32, 33 years of age, with people looking at him and saying, okay, what you gonna do? Because there is no Klay Thompson. Mm-hmm. Obviously, y'all are here, but y'all are not the same team. And this brother wins the scoring championship and is a top three league MVP candidate, put on an absolute show. And now we're going to sit up here and talk about Trae Young in his first playoff appearance. And we're going to say his ceiling is higher than that of Klay
Thompson.
Steph's
ceiling is lower than it should be when it matters most. And Trae just did something Steph's never done in his whole career.
So Steph ain't done nothing in the postseason.
The Western Conference Finals.
What's going to make a shot?
Now, I want to go over what you said very quickly right now.
Okay,
first, let's go over every final Steph was in. This is the only thing I'm asking. Who's the best player? It's rhetorical. He was the best player in the series. 2015, the answer was clearly LeBron. 2016, Steph was not the second best player in the series. It was LeBron and then Draymond. Then the next time he's in the finals, it's LeBron and then KD. He's not the second best player. Then the next, Draymond was going to win MVP in 2016 had they won.
Time out. Because of his performance in Game 7.
But no. He's going to get finals MVP.
No. I know that. Because of his performance in Game 7.
So far, Steph has not been the best player in the series ever in the finals. And it's usually not the second best player. The second time he plays with KD, when KD gets MVP, KD and LeBron are the best two players, and then Steph. Not the second best player. And then finally, the last time, Kawhi was the best player. Dude, you got to be the best player in the finals one time. You've been there five times. How about the second best more than a couple times?
Not if the conversation evolves around whether or not Trae Young's ceiling is higher than Steph Curry.
Okay. This conversation is not about
who's the best player.
I'll wrap it up by saying this, and Max Kellerman, I want to quote you properly. Trae is fearless under pressure, and Steph is careless under pressure.
Yep.
We'll leave it with that. Buckle up for this take from a very informed party. After KD showed out versus the Bucks, his former coach and Michael Jordan's former teammate had this to say.
He's the most talented basketball player on earth, if not of all time, honestly. He's just so gifted.
Played with Michael Jordan and I think
he's more gifted. I really do. I mean, that's saying something, but Kevin is a entirely different breed. I mean, 6'11 with guard skills, unlimited three-point range. It's just stunning. And watching him this year was really, really gratifying.
That's a lot there. Stephen A., is Kerr right about KD?
No, I don't think he's right. And here's why I don't think he's right. Because if you asked Steve Kerr who'd he prefer, it would be Michael Jordan. And he knows it. And that's the reality of the situation. Now, if you're speaking purely as a skilled situation, then, of course, you understand where he's coming from. KD 6'11 with a 7'6 wingspan and can do things very few humans on the planet can do. He can handle. He can shoot. He's a sniper extraordinaire. He's got long-range capability. All of those things are true. The game was played differently at that particular juncture, but KD could have played in any era. I'm not trying to sweat that. I'm just simply saying that even though the advent of the three-point shot had come into play, the bottom line is it wasn't utilized as effectively as it is in today's game, because back in the day, it was far more physical, and you were allowed to do more things defensively, which is why stuff like the Jordan rules came into play, because of the way that he was allowed to be mugged by the Detroit Pistons and later on the New York Knicks, as Max could attest to, from the Ken Bannisters to the Charles Oakleys and Anthony Masons, and the list goes on and on and on. You just had a physical brand of basketball that was allowed. And so because of that, people didn't exercise the use of the three-point shot the way that they're allowed to do today, where you literally can sit up there and get thrown out of a game or get teed up or pick up multiple fouls for having bad breath, for crying out loud. That's how soft today's game is compared to what it used to be. The level, the road to prosperity that you had to endure back in the day was far more arduous than it is today. And that's what you have to take into consideration. So for me, what I hold against Kevin Durant, specifically as it pertains to this comparison or this quote by Steve Kerr, is A, the times that we're playing in now compared to what it was then, and B, the one thing to hold against Kevin Durant, we all know what Kevin Durant is capable of, but it's whether or not he wants to. Kevin Durant, once Kyrie went down, and obviously James Harden was hobbled, was forced to step out of character and to be an assassin. Michael Jordan had that in his DNA from the moment he stepped on the court as an NBA player. That's the difference, and that is why I say no.
Steve Kerr is right, and he chose his words carefully. If he would have said the greatest ever, no. Michael Jordan's the greatest ever. If he would have said the most talented ever, no. I would say LeBron James or Michael Jordan are the most talented ever, even though KD shoots well. And KD shouldn't just be called gifted, because it's one thing to have talent. It's another thing to hone it into skill. KD is extremely skilled. He deserves credit for the work he's put in. But he said gifted, Stephen A. Gifts include size, right? You wouldn't say that size is a talent, but you can call it a gift. It is a gift. And there's never been a player at KD's size with the overall package of talent and skill, athletic ability, and honed craft as KD. He's right about the most gifted. Now, that's different than saying you always have the wisdom to deploy those gifts optimally, right? He's super efficient, but as good as his basketball IQ is, no one's is LeBron's. Just like when I say Kyrie is the most skillful player maybe ever, he's certainly one of them, but that doesn't mean he has the wisdom to deploy those skills running a team the way James Harden does, who's not as gifted, but is better because he understands the game a little bit differently or is able to make himself play that way. Saying gifted for KD points to everything that you always say, Stephen A. 6'11", 7'6", wingspan, can hit infinite range, as Steve Kerr said, can kill you from anywhere on the floor, can also defend. Check, 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 check. Most gifted, most talent plus skill at the size, but not the greatest of all time. I think Steve Kerr chose his words carefully.
Well, if size is a gift, so is mentality. And what I'm saying to you is that Michael Jordan has that mentality that we have consistently clamored for KD to have. For example, one could easily argue if KD had that mentality, he would have been strong enough to offset the strong-headedness and the strong-willedness of a Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City. And they wouldn't have given up a 3-1 lead to Golden State, and they may have won the title that year, all right, that Golden State lost to Cleveland. One could argue that. One could argue that if KD had been that way, he might have had a couple of titles. One could have argued he could have beaten Miami the year, even though Russell Westbrook and James Harden were relatively young. One could have argued that they would have beaten Miami when LeBron was still in search of his first title, because he didn't run across a KD that had an assassin's mentality. He ran across a KD who was incredibly gifted, but also judicious in terms of making sure the glory was spread and Russell Westbrook and Harden and others would get their opportunity to shine. And he was focused on playing basketball the right way. That same KD departed from OKC and went to Golden State. Why? Because there was a brand of basketball that he wanted to play. Well, and rather than enforce his will upon the franchise in OKC, he said, I'm going to go elsewhere, all right, where it already exists, and matriculate to that, and we'll see what happens. Well, so as far as I'm concerned, if height is a gift, if that size is a gift, mentality is a gift too.
I think
Michael Jordan had that.
I think that's a valid point. The only thing is that you have to consider, because we're both parents, and you know, and I got three kids, you know, in one way, they are the way they are when they're born. Like, they keep that basic personality. But in another way, you know, nurture has something to do with it, too. your environment and the way and what you're exposed to. So that is true for your mentality. But something like size, you're just born with it. That's just a pure gift. I think that's why Steve Kerr said it that way. He's not calling him the greatest. He's saying the most gifted, and I agree with that.
Well, I don't think Michael Jordan should be insulted or anything like that, but I respectfully disagree with Steve Kerr because of the discussion we just had.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go to the NFL, y'all. Should he stay or should he go now? We haven't talked Aaron Rodgers in a hot second. President Mark Murphy says he's divided the fan base. He opted out of a 3-day minicamp for the first time in his career and could potentially lose $90,000. He appears to be enjoying his offseason, spent some time in Hawaii, hosted Jeopardy, and is now preparing for a charity golf tournament in Montana where he'll play with Bryson DeChambeau against Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson. On the subject of Rodgers' future in Green Bay, his teammate Devontae Adams told Fox News earlier this week this: honestly, it's not even something that we truly talk about like that. It's just everybody's been dialed into what they've got to do. I think everybody's mindset, everybody is going to love Aaron the same way and when he returns. And obviously, it's been a little bit of a confusing situation, but there hasn't been any negative talk or anything like that. Everybody's behind him. All right, now we bring in my guy, Swagoo, Marcus Spears. Where are you? There he is, the big fella. It's been too long. Always put
What's up, my people?
Seeing you. I like the good vibes, that little sign behind you. I'll get to you in a minute, but I'm going to start with Mr. Smith. Stephen A., are you buying or selling this?
Well, I'm not buying any of it. I mean, what the hell are they supposed to say? They work for the Green Bay Packers. They're not going to come out and say but so much because they've got their own business to tend to, and they're not going to compromise their wallets. They know that they're not Aaron Rodgers. They don't have his money. They don't have his cachet. They don't have the level of support that he could ultimately garner. As a result, they have to be careful about what they say and what have you. And what is there to talk about? They know that Aaron Rodgers' willingness or unwillingness to be a Green Bay Packer has very little to do with them. They're 13-3, back-to-back NFC championship games. He knows they have talent, that they can compete. Aaron Rodgers not wanting to be there has nothing to do with the players. It has everything to do with management and how he's been treated, and a coach in Matt LaFleur, whom Aaron Rodgers believes passes the buck every chance he gets. One defensive coordinator is gone. It's always somebody else's fault. It's never him. And so it's not that he's a bad guy per se. It's that the level of accountability he's willing to stomach is limited. And obviously, we know Mark Murphy is incredibly detached. Just look at the quote that he put forth a few weeks ago, his engagement in spin control, where, you know, trying to talk about Aaron Rodgers is somebody difficult to deal with, as opposed to him looking in the mirror and thinking about the kind of culture that he's fostered throughout the years. First, it was Ted Thompson being disrespectful towards Aaron Rodgers. Now it's Gutekunst that's done the same thing. Obviously, they have the support of Murphy because Murphy lets them know, no matter what you do, I'm going to support you because you're more important than our superstar quarterback. That's what's going on in Green Bay. The players know it, but they can't come out and say it because it would compromise their job situation. And that's very, very predictable.
I'm buying this.
Man, I'm...
Sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, Swaggoo.
I'm just so sick of him with it. I'm so sick of Stephen A. with this dribble. Like, man, listen, man. Like, Aaron Rodgers got some responsibility in this. It ain't everybody else. He owns some of the buck. And for players to come out and say what Devontae said, it's obvious that they have to show loyalty to their paycheck. They got families to go home to. But, yeah, but it is a slight to the players, Stephen A., because their future is tied to Aaron Rodgers' future, as Devontae said a few weeks ago when he was asked this same question. And the reason why he says it's confusing is because we do have a good relationship with Aaron, but Aaron doesn't seem to let that overcome the things that's going on with the front office. I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers should handle his business based on all of the personal relationships that he has with the team and the players, but it does affect them. Not only do they have to ask questions about it, it affects them immediately on the field to play. Devontae wants Aaron Rodgers because Devontae is a better wide receiver with Aaron Rodgers. The defense is a better defense with Aaron Rodgers playing quarterback. So these guys are directly affected. I don't think that's Aaron Rodgers' intention for those guys to be affected. But for those players and for everybody to talk about this situation, like Aaron Rodgers is the one that's going that should be pampered and we should take care of him and think about his feelings and beyond everybody else. No, other people got scared in the game as well. And so Devontae is talking good about Aaron Rodgers, and he's saying that because he is in the Green Bay Packers organization. But the bottom line is, and the facts are, and the truth is, that all of these guys, especially Devontae Adams, is directly affected by the attitude and the things that Aaron Rodgers have taken towards the Green Bay Packers.
I like what you guys are seem feisty, but I'm
letting you go first, Max, but I'll deal with Marcus in a minute.
I'm not sure what the argument is here. The question is, do you buy or sell what Devontae Adams is saying? Like, do you believe him or not? I buy what Devontae Adams is saying because, look, forget about the part where he says it's not something we talk about. Like, everyone accepts the fact that athletes have to lie sometimes. Just like, that's how it is. Like, he's lying about that. Of course, no one talks about the Green Bay Packers, whether or not Aaron Rodgers, the reigning MVP, is going to come back and they're ready to win a Super Bowl. Of course they talk about it. I'm not buying that part. But the real thrust of what he's saying, Devontae Adams is saying this. I support Aaron Rodgers as a man, as my friend, right? As a colleague. Go do what's best for him. Of course I hope he comes back here because he's great and we want to win. Now, if he doesn't, that's out of my control. I got to put my head down and be the best I can be. Guys, if Jordan Love comes in and he's sailing passes over his head and he's missing them and Devontae Adams starts getting frustrated and you go back to Devontae Adams halfway through the season because Aaron Rodgers isn't there and he gives you this same answer, well, no, I'm fine. Then I'll call BS, right? But that hasn't happened yet. At this moment, he's telling you the truth that he can tell you. I am buying.
You know, Marcus Spears, you know, here's the thing that gets on my nerve about guys that like yourself. Because you see, like I tell you, the dangerous part about going up against me, Marcus Spears, is that I watch you because I enjoy you on television. You give exceptional analysis. You're very knowledgeable about the game of football. But you got to remember, you're talking to a brother that specializes in remembering quotes, my brother. And you got to also remember that I pay attention to personalities. And the fact of the matter is that Marcus Spears was a team player. Now, you got contaminated with your 8 years in Dallas. I get all of that. You got contaminated, having to be subjected to that nonsense,
man, being a member of the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay, you had to do that, right? But here's the thing. You know, Marcus Spears, if I remember correctly, he loved being in Dallas. It wasn't just the weather. It wasn't just the fact that it was in Texas. It was no state income taxes. He had an owner in Jerry Jones he liked a lot. He had a dude there, treated brothers with respect. You understand what I'm saying? Put you in the best positions to succeed, at least in his mind's eye. I'm talking about in terms of how y'all were treated. A la carte treatment. You know, being a cowboy, you understand? The star on the helmet, the billion-dollar playpen, all of that other stuff. You living a life. Oh, by the way, when you departed from Dallas,
Your last year in the NFL, who did you play for? I think it was the Baltimore Ravens. Another guy, John Harbaugh, straight up dude, very well respected organization. Wasn't Ozzie Newsome still there? I believe he was. Okay.
Absolutely.
And we all know what an elite executive the great Ozzie Newsome was throughout his illustrious NFL career as a GM. So what I'm saying to you is this. If Marcus Spears was playing in an organization where you were treated like trash, you were disrespected, you were disregarded, you were literally told to shut up, go play, we run the organization, when you the face of the franchise and you carried the franchise on your shoulders for the better part of a decade, when the only thing known outside of you in Green Bay was cheese and Clay Matthews' hairdo. That's it. Other than that, nothing else mattered. Other than those two things, other than you, the only two things that mattered in Green Bay was cheese and Clay Matthews' hairdo. Him giving Troy Polamalu a run for his money with all those damn hair commercials. That's about it. And you were treated like that, you would lose your damn mind. So for you to sit here on national television, acting like, oh my goodness, Aaron Rodgers, he got some skin in this game. He played a role in this and all of this other nonsense. When we all know we ain't talking about football, we're talking about the way the man was treated. And you, of all people, would never tolerate anybody talking to you and treating you the way Green Bay treated Aaron Rodgers. That's what this is about. Let's stop acting like we don't know it and stop acting like it's about football. It's not.
So Green Bay not drafting a wide receiver and drafting Jordan Love is the disrespect that you talking about? Is that what you're talking about,
no,
Stephen A?
No, I'm talking about the way Mark Murphy, Ted Thompson, then Brian Gutekunst, and Matt LaFleur treated. Matt LaFleur, when he took the ball out of his hands on fourth down, do you remember what he said? Oh, I didn't even think about talking about him. I didn't even think of talking to him about it. I don't know why I didn't think about it. He thought he was playing with four downs, not three. Gutekunst making moves, doesn't even give him
Stephen
the courtesy
A.
of a phone call. Ted Thompson, Mark Murphy, you say
you
talked about him.
Can you and I have an intelligent conversation and say two things can be true? Can two things be true? All right?
Yes.
Can it be true that what Aaron Rodgers is going through right now with the Green Bay Packers is affecting his teammates? Can that be true? Is it far-fetched to think that the guys in that locker room and the guys that are getting ready to play in this season that's not an Aaron Rodgers situation are going through things because Aaron Rodgers may not be there? I'm directly impacted by great players around me helping me prolong my career. Okay, that's an impact. Playing alongside of DeMarcus Ware helped me prolong my career. Having guys like Tony Romo and Jason Witten and T.O. and all of those guys having success turned into team success, which ultimately turns into individual success. Okay, you still got to handle your business. You still got to do your job. But all of those factors matter when we talking about being on the field. I wasn't talking about Mark Murphy or Brian Gutekunst. We all agree that Green Bay could have made better decisions. It was dumb for Mark Murphy to say that Ted Thompson talked about Aaron Rodgers being a complicated fellow. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is his teammate, Devontae Adams, saying this does not affect us. This is something that's going to get figured out when Aaron Rodgers returns. He don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to return. That's why he alluded to it being confusing, okay? But all of the cry me a river about all of the things that's been done to Aaron Rodgers, there's also another side to it, and it can be true as well. That's my point.
Well, that's where you lose me. That last part is where you lose me, because the reality is that if this man carried the organization on his damn shoulders and he was treated in the fashion that I've alluded to, because I'm telling you, that's how he was treated, that matters. And also this, Marcus, if I sit up there, right, and I'm the star, I'm the franchise, right, and you and I both know as teammates, I'm not happy. I'm on my way out of here, yo. Listen, after this season's up, I'm out. I ain't coming back to this. Now, I ain't going to let the world know. I'm not going to let the world know, but I'm telling you, you know what? Davante Adams and Valdez Scantlin and all of these brothers, I'm quite sure what Aaron Rodgers is feeling is not new to them. It's not foreign to them. So my point is that his obligation to them has been fulfilled. I let you know where I stand. I let you know how I feel. I let you know exactly what the hell I'm going to do. I did it privately. Now it's become public because I've told Green Bay, I don't want to come back. I want to get traded up out of here. But they weren't surprised when Aaron Rodgers said that. So if he showed them that level of respect, he don't owe them anything.
I don't know what
so y'all. So what the hell is he confused about then?
I don't know what y'all are arguing about. I think everyone agrees that Aaron Rodgers has been disrespected, that his situation's affecting his team. Mm-hmm. And the question about Davante Adams is, are you buying it or selling it? And do you believe him or not? And what I'm saying is, athletes have to lie sometimes about the situation. Of course they talk about it. It's not like no one's talking about it. But Davante Adams answered the question perfectly. Perfectly. Supported his quarterback. Said he has got to keep his head down and work no matter what, basically, right? Hopes the quarterback will be back. But what's he supposed to do if Aaron Rodgers doesn't come back? Say, I'm not going to play with Jordan Love? He was as honest as he could be under the circumstances. I'm buying what he said. You could read it clearly and see where
and
the BS is.
And he's still confused. And he's still confused. He's still confused about what's going on because he said it.
All right. We'll leave it on that note. Well, we're all confused because we don't know what's going to happen.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. I don't know what was better, the dunk or Stephen A. and Wilbon's face. Prop to whoever caught that on camera. Kawhi Leonard, guys, still sidelined. Chris Paul is probable. Game 3 in L.A. tonight. Suns up 2-0. They have won 9 straight playoff games. It's remarkable. Phoenix favored by 1. Max, do you have more confidence in the Suns or in the Clippers in Game 3 tonight now that it's in L.A.?
The answer is the Suns because Chris Paul's supposed to play and Kawhi's not. Well, I mean, the Suns just beat them twice, very close at home. I think on a neutral site, the Clippers could have won. I think at home, the Clippers could have won. That's without Chris Paul. But if you add Chris Paul, who, keep in mind, this is a first ballot Hall of Fame player who has played at an exceptionally high level throughout his career in the regular season and in the playoffs. And Chris Paul is coming off the best series of his career. That's the best basketball he has ever played. Think about that. And he's never been to a finals. He is so thirsty right now, and he's had to be sidelined and watch this team, by the way, win by the skin of their teeth, and he has to be thinking, this team needs me. This is as motivated as can be, all-time great, peaking, joining a team that has won 9 straight playoff games. I'm more confident in the Suns.
Not tonight.
Tonight, I'm more confident in the Clippers. I think their back's against the wall. I think if they lose game three, they get swept. And I don't see that happening. These games have been close. They have not had Kawhi Leonard. Obviously, that's an incredible adjustment for them. Everybody's anticipating an upgrade from CP3. He will play tonight. He will be ready. But I think that when you look at the Los Angeles Clippers, listen, Paul George missed those two free throws with 8.2 seconds left. No doubt about it. But he was balling up until that point. I mean, he went on his own personal 8-2 run. He ended up with 26 for the game. The previous four games, he scored over 30, and he's been playing lights out. Reggie Jackson, I can't say enough about him. He only had 19 the other day on 7-15 shooting. He's going to be the difference because I think he needs to shoot more. Reggie Jackson needs to shoot more and get aggressive. With Kawhi Leonard being out, he needs to shoot more. Terrence Mann, that kid, the second-year player out of Florida State that dropped 39 in game six to close out Utah. I think that that's a guy that needs more playing time in this series. I think Ty Lue recognizes that, and I think you'll see more Terrence Mann tonight, and I think that you'll see the Clippers feeding off of this crowd. Max, last week, I've never seen the crowd at a Clippers game like that in my life. I've never seen it, ever, okay? And so it's a different ball game right now. They recognize what's at stake. And to me, to say that the Clippers are going to lose tonight and that's more confident in the Suns is basically saying that the Clippers are going to get swept. Mm. It's possible. I'm not dismissing your point because it's a very good one because CP3 is going to be ready. Make no mistake. And the Suns have been balling. We understand that. And I don't think Devin Booker is going to have a game like he had in game two. It's going to be closer to game one. But I still find myself looking at the Los Angeles Clippers right now. They're not the Utah Jazz. They don't just have one player that can create his own shot and everybody else dependent on him to create something for them. They got multitude of dudes who can create their own shot. And Reggie Jackson is the first name that comes to my mind outside of Paul George. And I think that, along with, you know, with Terrence Mann being out there a lot, I think that the Clippers survive. And they push it to game four, threatening to even up this series. Because if they lose tonight, they're getting swept.
Well, look, you know, Mike Conley wasn't available. The reason they only had one dude is the injury has basically decided these entire playoffs. Yeah. And if Kawhi was playing, I would not say this is it for the Clippers. But I do think it's it for the Clippers. I think this is it for the Clippers. Now, can they win this game? Stephen A., it's possible that the Clippers can steal a game here, even without Kawhi. They are at home. It was close before. And Chris Paul is coming back. But then that affects the rotation and all those things. Maybe they could get a game. And if they got a game and Kawhi came back for a game four, I'm not saying the series is even over, right? But I'm not hearing great things about Kawhi's knee. Are you? No one's telling me. Yeah, everyone's optimistic. Kawhi's coming back.
Can you stop right there? Can you stop right there?
Yeah.
Max, as an aside, based on the point you just made, does it not bother you? Because it bothers me that we're not hearing more about Kawhi Leonard. It's like game to game. I mean, listen, did he tear his ACL? What's the status?
It sounds like something.
The fact that it's allowed to go game to game. I mean, Kawhi Leonard might not be back until next season.
Right.
I think everybody has a right to know that. I think everybody has a right to know that. And this game to game stuff where, all right, you know, he's listed as this. It's almost like they're trying to hide it for the Suns so you can compromise their preparation.
It does have that feeling.
Because you never know. I don't like that.
It does have that feeling, but Stephen A., that's demoralizing for the Clippers more than anything. If they had Kawhi, they'd still have a chance. They have Ty Lue. This is the comeback specialist coach who makes adjustments and all that. He's not going to be able to overcome a Suns team. Like, you give the Suns a little advantage. They had it against the Lakers because of injury, right? I thought the Suns would be a powerhouse this year, but DeAndre Ayton be a little green, right? Not quite their time. Maybe next year. What happens? AD is hurt and then out. LeBron is compromised. They beat the Lakers. They're down 2-1. They come back and win all the rest of the games. They face a Denver team without Jamal Murray. And they take care of them in quick fashion, sweep them. And now they're facing a team without their best player. And what are the Suns what have they done in these playoffs when injury affects the other team? They crush them. When you say if they win game three, they sweep, I think there's a very good chance the Suns sweep this series.
Well, both games have been very, very tight. And I'm here to tell you something right now. Reggie Jackson can play.
Sure can.
That brother can play. And he can create his own shot. And Patrick Beverley, you know how much I love Patrick Beverley. He's hitting open shots when they give it to him.
open threes. He's hitting them, so they can't leave him open. Marcus Morris, it's like a roller coaster because he might not do so much offensively one game, but then another game he'll drop over 20. The dude can play.
They right, shoot DeMar- the ball DeMarcus very well.
Cousins, DeMarcus Cousins. Let me tell you something about DeMarcus Cousins. When he gets in the game, he has an impact. And we keep forgetting that this is a brother that before he got injured was averaging 28 a game in the NBA. I mean, listen, to tell me they can't win a game at home, and
I know you're not saying that.
I'm not saying it either. To me, the bigger question is, can we imagine them getting swept?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't see the Clippers getting swept.
Chris Paul and that's is so where I'm thirsty at with right
it.
Now.
That's where well, I'm at with
Game
it.
3 is pivotal for that factor. So Stephen A. thinks the Clippers get it done. He'll be in the building for that. And Max saying injuries deciding everything, and Chris Paul will be back. No Kawhi. So that tips the scales.